Well, definitely from my world where I'm seeing a lot of the technology that's coming out and maybe a year or two ahead of what people are seeing in their homes, just the tools are getting cheaper. They're getting more powerful. I mean, if you look at just smartphones and tablets, what's out there now for, $200, $300 is so much more powerful than what was out there even a year or two ago. And as these tools get cheaper, you're going to see more of them in classrooms. You're going to see school districts that are more able to afford them and universities. So it's exciting when you think about the possibilities of these very powerful, cheap devices in the hands of students and educators. That's kind of the amazing idea of it, is the possibility of what can we do with these amazing tools. Where it starts to get a little bit fuzzier is, what do we do when they break? Is the software and the stuff we'll be seeing on these tools really that much better than traditional educational tools? That's where things start to seem a little bit less than perfect.
What do you think about using these tools as part of the lesson plan? Do you think they really do much in the way of reinforcing the lesson?
There's a big debate about that. I mean, I think some educators feel that, wow, this is exactly what we've been looking for, that this really powerful tool that can get us online, that can expose us to ebooks, that can play videos. I mean, they're really all-in-one tools. On the other hand, I mean, does this stuff fly in the face of 60, 70, 80 years of educational research about what really works in the classroom? I think these tools are very seductive. They're very sexy. If you look at what Apple introduced last week with the iPhone 5, everybody wants to have that in the classroom and have kids exposed to it. But are they really going to learn better than they would from traditional materials? And when I say traditional, I don't just mean printed books. We've had computers in the classrooms for a very long time, but it seems like in some cases we may be throwing out a lot of that learning and a lot of that education in favor of these tools that are really, in some cases, very unproven, or at least the software or the online curriculum may not be as rigorously tested or as rigorously thought out as what we've been using in the past.
And I guess at that point, we're really starting to talk about what's bad about having this new technology and this new way of teaching going on.
Right. I mean, a big part of it is digital distraction. Is this stuff going to actually help students learn, or is it just going to be one more distraction in the classroom that they can kind of tune out to? There's the question of, things that are online that they might be exposed to in terms of cyberbullying or harassment. There's the idea of that we've been talking about over email, the participants in the panel, about defamation. Like, if students are allowed to put anything out there online, is this stuff that's going to come back to haunt them? That's a danger. So yeah, there's a lot of things to consider. Of course, most students are going to want to have this technology in the classroom. They're going to want to bring their own tech tools to the classroom that they can use. And I think a lot of teachers will have success in incorporating those devices into their lesson plans. But again, we come back to the question of, is this actually better? Is this actually going to help? Or in some ways, is it going to be a hindrance and a distraction?
You started to touch on what's really kind of considered the ugly about this, and we see it in the news, the sexting, the cyberbullying. Is this just a matter of plain old knuckleheaded behavior being translated into the digital realm?
Yeah, kids will never stop being knuckleheads. Teenagers will never stop being knuckleheads. I was probably a knucklehead at that age. What the question is some of this stuff overblown, or should parents really be that worried? I mean, obviously, in the media, we see a lot of kind of scare tactics, a lot of oh my God, your kids are in danger at every moment they're on the internet. And I think kids by that age, especially as teenagers, are much more savvy than I think we give them credit for. But that's not to say there aren't dangers out there, that there's not cyberbullying happening, that there's not predatory behavior happening online that parents need to help their kids avoid. So I'm very curious what the panelists think. I actually have a 5-year-old and an almost 3-year-old, so I'm not quite at that stage of seeing my kids confront that kind of online behavior. So I'm very curious to hear other perspectives from the experts on the panel on what they're seeing, and not just from their own kids, but also legal cases. We have some legal experts on the panel who will be weighing in on what the legal implications are of a lot of this kind of behavior.
As the father of 2 young daughters, what do you hope and anticipate that their educational experience with technology will be like?
I'm already seeing in our own home, we have 2 iPads that they gravitate toward. They've never really been exposed to the computer keyboard and the mouse as much. So they're already sort of intuitively grasping these touch interfaces, these touch screens and apps. They've kind of grown up on them already. So on the one hand, I was worried that they weren't being exposed enough to traditional computers. On the other hand, I thought, well, this is where everything's going. This is what they're going to be exposed to in the classroom in the next 5 to 10 years. So hopefully I've prepared them a little bit for that, but I'm also very curious to see what's going to actually be in the classrooms and what they're going to be interfacing with. As a parent, I'm a little bit worried about that. And as a person who covers technology, I know what the pitfalls are in stuff that is very alluring and distracting and not necessarily very educational.